This is the concluding part of our discussion on Burkina Faso. Eshiru, this channel's political commentator on all topics concerning Africa and Western imperialism, is as ever his insightful and vocal self. We have talked at length and never enough about Thomas Sankara. In this episode, we skip through the darkness of his murder at the foreign manipulated hands of his best friend Blaise Compaoré. We are keen to focus on the positivity of African leadership, and it is for this reason that we are eager to introduce Traoré into the fold. A character very much in the mold of Sankara, Ibrahim Traoré, already the survivor of multiple assassination attempts, is a leader for whom the interests of his people come first, and he isn't even trying to sell merchandising to further his goals. His policies are tough and straightforward. Thank you, Eshiru, again for your time. Tuna Mike clocking out. Enjoy. Jepek kuduelo mabiro etu anda mic dung paro dit kod joke mawoye tu anda mic seche tin sud buta wawinji etu anda mic wala wachokre wabed piny biwawinje erochako moment ndi tu anda mic podcast makende. I'm very pleased to have my friend Eshiru back and to provide a conclusion to the nation that is Burkina Faso. Eshiru, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me once again, Zach. Thank you.
Yeah, we kind of left things in episode 2 from Burkina Faso. We were talking about the myth that was Thomas Sankara. But unfortunately, even myths, it appears, come to an end. And Sankara was assassinated on the 15th of October in 1987 by essentially his best friend.
Yes, indeed. Assassinated. Unfortunately, it was over Sankara. I believe that Compaoré was more, I think he saw something very different from what Sankara did. And I think for personal gain, as opposed to the country and the people, he arranged for Sankara to be killed, which I thought was such a shame, because had Sankara been able to continue living and they had worked together, I could have seen we'd probably be looking at Burkina Faso in the same place where we see Rwanda today, more or less, in terms of development.
Yeah, and one can only imagine how we would have seen the entire continent of Africa, perhaps a shining light of freedom, technological advancement, innovation, and basically a place where everything is possible. Whereas very large parts of the continent, unfortunately, are mired in crises which have essentially been forced upon them by imperial motivations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, it is important to stress here, because a lot of people tend to push back and they always say, oh, you know, can't continue to blame the West for Africa's problems. But people need to understand the nuances, you know, that what you'll find is that African nations do have the resources that Western and Chinese and Russian companies require in order to manufacture products. And they require those resources at the prices that they're available at in order for these companies to be profitable, so you and I can get the products at a low cost. So even though they're not necessarily holding a gun to the head of African leaders, they're supplying weapons, they are backing militia groups to keep countries unstable, so they can easily access a lot of the materials that they need in order to manufacture products that they want. And let's remember that most of these countries that are resource-rich in Africa, they have been set up in such a way that you have extraction industries and exports. There's nothing in between, okay? Even those who've tried to at least work towards putting up and setting up a manufacturing base are prevented from doing so. Yeah, I just wanted to just fill that in there for people to get a better understanding.
What we should also highlight with regards to Blaise Compaoré is that he did not act alone. He was essentially turned away from his joint vision with Thomas Sankara by foreign intervention, in this case, chiefly the Ivory Coast, but also indirectly, or perhaps even directly, we don't know exactly, France played a large role in that process. So we had a democratically supported, I should say, president in Thomas Sankara, who was replaced by essentially a dictator who was supported by France for 27 years and who ruled until 2014.
That is correct. And after that point, now let's go back just a touch. Mm-hmm. The thing that we should also remember with France is France is heavily invested in countries like Burkina Faso, French-speaking parts, and other French-speaking parts of Africa. A lot of their economy, much of their economy and industries that they have, whether it's banking or otherwise, are heavily dependent on some of these countries. Again, like Burkina Faso, the Congo, etc. So yes, as you said, until 2014. And then in comes our boy, Ibrahim Traore, a very young, a very astute, very quiet gentleman, born in 1988, showed promise from a very, very early age. He studied geology at the University of the capital of Burkina Faso, Ouagadougou, and in his outlook, political leanings, he's said to be Marxist in his tendencies. University graduate in honors, in fact.
Yeah, just going to say, which is, it kind of dovetails really with Thomas Sankara, doesn't it, in that sense? Some of the inspiration, the political inspiration behind his ideology.
Absolutely. If you study Sankara, and if you look at Traore, Traore almost mirrors what Sankara was doing. I mean, once, of course, the years of Kampore were not bad, but they weren't as good as Sankara. A few things fell back. I believe that diseases went up, the illiteracy rate went up also. Females became, in air commerce, traditional female roles. And again, Traore, he was kind of believed in what, looking back on the way he thinks, he believed in what Sankara was trying to do for the country, and he wanted to bring some of that back. Again, in the short time that he's been in office, he has implemented some of the very things that Sankara himself had. I believe that the top earners across all government sectors have had their wages reduced, and the majority that do the heavy lifting, so say, the workers at work in extraction industries and various other areas of government have had their wages increased as a result. This hasn't caused disharmony, but his argument is if these people are actually doing the work and we're here to support them doing the work, why should we get better paid? He has also reduced all the big spending on, you know, very fancy cars. So he no longer drives around in one of these big Mercedes or as Kampore did. I believe he drives a very modest, very small, modest Renault of some kind. And this is being literally implemented across all governments. There are no big cars, no need for Mercedes and BMWs, according to Ibrahim Traore. Again, he says that let's put the money where it's needed in female and adult literacy. Let's put it into children's education. Let's invest in vaccine programs to increase the healthcare of the nation. His way of thinking is a healthy, informed workforce is a more productive workforce. Production means it's beneficial for the country.
And it's important to point out as well, as you say, Traore's practically entire life as a youth, growing up, educating himself, was played out with the background of Blaise Compaoré and the corruption that ensued and the way that he managed himself and his government and the dissatisfaction and the continuous dissatisfaction of the people of Burkina Faso. And this reached until 2014, where the event took place of the uprising. And right, this is basically when Compaoré tried to change the constitution or get himself reelected and beyond what he was allowed. And the people said, no, we're not having any more of this. Yep. And then ensued another period of political instability until 2022. So Traore has been in charge, as it were, for a short period since October. So it's basically just about 2 years now.
Correct.
But once again, in the same way that Sankara, in the 3 years that he was allowed to rule, he introduced so many positive changes for the people. The same phenomena has occurred under Traore. And you mentioned the principles which he introduced, but then we also have other kind of healthcare initiatives. We'll kind of, if we go through these a little bit. So Sankara had his project where we talked about before, he provided vaccinations for children. He provided other kinds of healthcare provision for the people in urban environment, but also in rural areas. Traore has done more or less the same. He's looked at the problems of the country, and he's noticed that there are access issues, infrastructure issues. And so therefore, he created this concept of mobile clinics. Which work on the back of the 36 vehicles and 13 refrigerated units that he has purchased. Three oxygen production units have been created, 11 cold rooms, 1,900 solar refrigerators. He's bought 835 tablets for digital health records. I mean, digital health records is a project which even the European Union is working on. So, you know, just to say that, you know, these seem, people look at it, oh, okay, well, he's bought some fridge freezers. No, that's not the case. He has looked at the needs, the healthcare needs of his people, and he has introduced piecemeal solutions to improve their lot.
And let's also remember, he prioritizes women's health over everybody else's, because he's a firm believer, like Sankara. If the health of the women in a nation is good, then the men and the children will fare better. Okay, which is that's God given, right? I mean, we're feminists here. We're not excluding anybody, but we understand that if women feel good and women are doing well in society, then the rest of us will fare better as a result. And this is something that he's prioritizing. And I think the sad thing is that we don't hear enough about this, because we're living where we do in the industrialized world. We always get a very two-dimensional view of the world instead of the world being presented to us from a very holistic view, so we can get a better understanding. So we only ever hear about the negative things. For example, when they decided to get rid of the French out of Mali and Burkina Faso, instead of talking about what it is that they were trying to do and all these programs that's implemented, which all have been worthy of being aired, right? People should understand this stuff so they can get a better background on why they're doing what they're doing. The only thing they focused on was they threw us out. The French got thrown out to Mali today. The French got thrown out to Burkina Faso. That's it. There's no background. Provide the background. Allow people to make up their own minds. Get a better understanding of what's going on. And then maybe people realize, oh, bloody hell, it's actually a very good thing. Secondly, people, it would probably then gain some support from people from the outside world, which will then give it a push to be able to roll into, you know, into bigger things and allow it to grow.
Yeah, definitely. And it continues, this list of solutions which he has produced. He has procured 400 tractors available to farmers for free, because farmers before had suffered back-breaking work hour upon hour upon hour. And yet now, suddenly, with a tractor, all of the things that which took them hours and days and weeks to do, they can now do in a fraction of the time. Once again, he is thinking about making the process not only more efficient for the production within the country, but also he's thinking about the people who are actually doing that.
Absolutely. And as I said earlier on, the way that he views the nation, he sees that everybody has a part to play, that no person, let's say the person in the field, is as important as the person sat in the office, even though he hasn't said this himself. But the fact that he has a Marxist view to his thinking, and if you look at the way that he's implementing some of these policies, he's looking at society as a whole and how everybody benefits. And that says a lot about him believing that everybody has an integral part to play, and every person, regardless of where they're working, is as important as the next person. And you can see that in the policies that he's putting out.
Yeah. Another similarity, I would say, with Sankara is the vision that he has for the environment. He has supported or introduced a support system with high quality seeds, which is suitable to Burkina Faso's climate and regions. And so therefore allows for crop fields to be increased. lush green fields to be developed, so that he can counteract the suffering of poor harvests in the past. And he's been there himself to work on some of these projects directly. Once again, another similarity with Thomas Sankara.
Absolutely. Very much a man of the people, in my opinion. He's not scared of getting his hands dirty. But he's from the people, okay? He doesn't see himself above or better than. And this in itself allows him to be able to win the popularity. Let's remember, this guy is just 36 years old. He's a young man, okay? He's still got a lot of time. And because, you know, I've always said this, leaders that are doing the right thing in Africa, there are always attempts on their life. And Ibrahim Traore, I believe, has suffered anywhere from between 5 and 7 different attempts. Some say as much as 9. But the attempts on his life has already been made. And that says, that shows you how he's doing the right thing.
Just on that statistic, I read somewhere that it was 18 assassination attempts.
Well, there you go. There you go. I mean, it could be as much as 18. It could be more. I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I'm not discounting anything, because, you know, what is it they say? No matter how, if you can think of a situation and you think of it rationally, and the only thing that's left is the absurd, then the absurd must be true, and it could be 18.
Yeah,
as absurd as it sounds, absolutely.
Completely. And in one other area, or perhaps two, but put them together in economic and industrial development. He has supported the textile industry. If we remember back in our previous podcast about Burkina Faso, we talked about how Sankara, he modeled clothing created by Burkina Faso. So once again, another similarity. He has created Renaissance City with Burkina Faso funds, materials by local Burkinaba people who have worked there. He's cancelled foreign contracts in gold mining. And again, just as Sankara said all those years ago, the Burkinabe can mine its own gold.
Absolutely. And, you know, he realizes that Africa and Burkina, he realizes the continent can be self-sufficient. Okay. There are more than enough raw materials there for the continent to be self-sufficient. I believe he was approached by the IMF for a loan to help him extract some of the gold and some of the uranium, and he refused to do that. Now, personally, I think this is a good move, because anybody that knows much about the World Bank and IMF, they don't really serve to help African nations or developing nations. They serve more or less to keep developing nations where they are, okay? And let's remember the DRC and Zambia, rather. They had a project where they wanted to create a car battery, okay? Now, they have the raw materials, they have the extraction industry and the processing to be able to do the first part of the car battery. They wanted to build a battery plant to build the batteries and then ship the batteries globally to the manufacturers of electric vehicles. They were stopped from doing that due to something called the Lupito project, or Lupito Corridor project, by Joe Biden. Now, why were they stopped? First of all, because these two countries had relied on loans through the IMF and the World Bank for their countries. So attached to these loans are often conditions. And one of the conditions in many cases is that they cannot have any industries that spring up that are competing with the countries that offer the loans, okay? Secondly, it would have been bad for American battery manufacturing businesses. But imagine I've got my country, I have the opportunity to be able to build for myself, but I'm told from somebody who doesn't live within my borders that I can't do it because I lent some money from them 10 years ago. How is Africa to ever get on her feet if she's always going to be dictated to by Western business interests? And taking it back to Ibrahim Traore, he's trying to break the mold and saying, hold on, but we've got this here. We can do it for ourselves. Colonel Gaddafi was doing the same thing. Again, we can talk about Kwame Nkrumah and Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara. These guys all had the same idea at different times what Africa should be. But of course, Western business interests are not happy with that. And I'll throw China in there as well, because people so like to hear that China are also not doing what they're supposed to be doing. But yeah, this is it. This is it as it is, unfortunately.
And one more point also to raise from the way in which Traoré is doing what he's doing. He's introduced stricter environmental controls in all of this, and higher labor standards. So it's not just about the national economy. He, as you said before, he's of the people. He cares about the people. And he wants the country to develop in a way where everybody develops along with it.
Absolutely. As I said, you know, a fitter, stronger, well-informed workforce is a more productive workforce. Okay. If you look at the models that we're using here in this part of the world, and private equity firms enter a country, a developed country, an industrialized country, wages are often suppressed, prices go through the roof. People can't access healthcare. People often get sicker, they eat poor foods as a result, but they're still expected to turn up and go to work. Ibrahim Traoré can see this happening from afar, and he's trying to ensure that this doesn't happen to his people. They're already on the back foot, and he's trying to springboard them into the future, or into, you know, the more developed or industrialized world. And he understands the importance of all of these things going hand in hand: clean, better environments, accessible healthcare, you know, maybe free by the point of use, or affordable, an educated workforce, a healthier workforce. All these things go hand in hand. And again, this comes from leftist ideal thinking.
I'm sure you've seen these video clips or photographs of people from different African nations walking through the desert, trying to get to the northern reaches from where they can get a boat and risk an extremely dangerous journey to try to reach Europe. Is there not an argument here then for those people walking? And I cannot be somebody to make any kind of judgment on their lives until I have walked a mile in their shoes. But is there not an argument for some of these nations to come together and say, if you are in a situation where you cannot provide, come to us? And Burkina Faso perhaps could represent one of those oases where young, as because you've commented before, a huge percentage of the continent of Africa is so young. Is this a place where they can go?
People have to understand that there's an opportunity for them, right? People still believe that there's a lot of opportunity in Europe, and to some extent, yes, there is. But I would argue if people want to remain within Africa, I mean, I think the continent itself is fascinating, has so much to offer. People want to make money as soon as possible to help their families. And Burkina Faso is probably not the place for them to be right now, but it may be the place for them to be in a few short years, anywhere from 5 to 10 years from now. It may be the place for them to be. So in the short term, Europe might be the answer, but we already know that Europe has become a fortress, right? Or becoming a fortress. They want less and less people traveling here. But I think that if they can implement or build the right universities and the right educational institutions in various parts of Africa, educate people, educate generations of people in all these different ways, it can get these countries fully sufficient and keep people within their borders. And it's something that I always say when I'm talking to a lot of people that, you know, are not very happy about immigrants coming to our parts of the world. I always tell them, stop bombing their homes, stop bombing their villages, stop bombing their cities, stop bombing their countries, stop selling arms to other countries to do the job for you, stop arming friendly terrorist groups. Then the asylum seekers may stay at home. And if it's too late, we got to live with the consequences. And that just kind of backs up what I was saying earlier, that Western interests need to leave African nations alone for them to be able to get on. Work with them. Don't dictate to them. We already have the technology here. China was able to take itself from zero to where it is today, I think within a generation, about a 30-year period. With the technology that is available today, most of Africa could be where China is in about 15 to 20 short years, which isn't very long in the grand scheme of things. And if Africa is self-sufficient, of course, products are not going to be as cheap as they are today, because everything's going to be sold at market value. But you'll have a far less people making a perilous journey, only to be here to be disappointed or dying along the way. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, this is the thing which for me is the tragedy is after leaving their homes because they've made the decision that they need to do something to change something, the journey itself is so high risk. The dangers are so present constantly throughout that trip. And then to reach a place where they're essentially treated like, in some cases, animals, they're caged or they're put in these kinds of halfway centers or whatever it is that they are. It's horrible the way that they are treated. And if there were any kind of possibility for this to be avoided and another kind of solution to be found in a place where they are valued in the way that they should be, then I would only wish that this kind of solution could be made available to them.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest problems, first of all, is how we view these people here in the West, in industrialized world. I hate saying the West and first and second world countries. In industrialized world, we first have to view them as people, right? I mean, I certainly do. But, you know yourself when you're reading the newspapers or the mainstream press, the toxic tabloids, they refer to them as migrants. And, you know, they give them these really dehumanizing, self-degrading names, and it's from that perspective people then view them, and you know they're meant to be viewed with suspicion and, you know, looked down upon. And, you know, first we have to see them as people, and we have to do that collectively, and that they have just as much right to life as we do, okay? And much of the problem, the poverty that they're going through, it comes from the legacy of, let's, you know, I know that Britain and America try to absolve themselves of what happened hundreds of years ago in the slave trade, but let's have it right. You know, these countries are in the state they're in because of what happened 300 years ago, and they've not been able to catch up, and they're still being exploited today. And we have to, as a people, humanity, we have to at least have an honest conversation about, you know, about this problem. And until we can actually have this honest conversation, we're still going to be viewing these people as migrants and as a pest and a swarm, and not myself personally, but the way that they're written about in the paper. And it has to change, because I sit here in a privileged position. I live in London, and I'm here in my second home, Sweden, and I move between the two. And I see a time, certainly from Britain, I see a time in my lifetime, I see people leaving the island en masse, looking for work and looking for shelter, not because they're fleeing war or persecution, but purely because it's going to become too expensive for them to live there, and they're not going to be earning enough money. So they'll end up going to live in places like Slovenia and Poland and Hungary, countries that we were once taught to look down upon, in order to seek a better life. And these are the people who are quick to point their fingers at black and brown people in boats or black and brown people coming to these shores. But they themselves should be careful who they look down on, because they never know themselves when they may be in a position asking for a helping hand.
Yeah, completely. Especially also when you mentioned some of the responsibility, the legacy responsibilities, but as you also say, these are practices which continue until today. The extractive nature of some of the economies, if the wealth of African nations is constantly being removed and extracted in a way where multinational corporations aren't even paying tax locally in African nations, they're also paying tax only in havens where the amount of tax that they have to pay is extremely small. So therefore,
yes,
the countries where most of these companies originate from are not providing any benefit to the people there either. This money, this wealth is going into the hands of corporations. It's not going into the hands of the industrialized nations' peoples either. And so therefore, you've got poor people at the point of extraction. You've got poor people in the European countries or China or the UK or the US as well. So what is basically happening? That wealth is going to the few. And then the people who are moving from African nations because they're not getting any kind of money have to go looking for money. And other poor people are stopping the poorer people from having access to a little bit.
Absolutely. This is basically where we are today, unfortunately. It's where we are. It's very sad that it's that way. But the machine is well oiled, okay? It's set up that way. I think we spoke about educational institutions where the leaders of African nations send their children to the top schools across Europe. Their children buy cars that are manufactured and clothes that are manufactured by designers in Europe. These children then go to the same schools and educational institutions of the children of the countries that exploit the home countries of these African leaders' children. When these children then go back home and take over the business or take over running the country for government, they're already friends with, you know, the heads of the countries and companies that exploit their countries, and so continues the business. And the cycle must be broken by African nations themselves. And I'm seeing this being done by people like the very, very brave Captain Ibrahim Traoré. It's something he realizes needs to be broken. We have to do it for ourselves here. And I see him doing that.
Very much so. And I'm very happy you brought it back to the positive story, which is Ibrahim Traoré. I hope that his example will continue to grow, that he will have the opportunity to really put his project into the heart of growth within Burkina Faso, and that other African nations will also be inspired by him. So definitely watch this space of Burkina Faso.
Absolutely. I think that it's an exciting time in that part of the world, and also the region, you know, the entire country, sorry, the entire continent itself. It's an exciting time for Africa, and it's nice to see that, you know, there's more development happening in various other parts of Africa, certainly that side. So yeah, it's definitely one to watch. Definitely one to watch.
Wonderful. Okay. It's been a pleasure talking with you about Burkina Faso. We will move on to yet another exciting African nation still to be decided. We are very much open to that. But thank you very much, Eshuru, once again for your voice and for your insight.
Thank you very much for having me, Zach. I look forward to working with you again at some point in the very near future.
Two and a mic.